Imagine a man walking alone through the English countryside in the early 20th century. He's left behind a thriving medical career, a respected position in London hospitals, and he's left behind the approval of his peers. Now, he's not disgraced. He's not exiled. He leaves because something essential has gone missing from medicine, and he can no longer pretend otherwise. As he walks, he notices something peculiar. His thoughts begin to soften near certain flowers. His breathing changes. Grief loosens its grip when he kneels beside one plant, while anxiety begins to sharpen near another. This isn't romantic imagination. He is trained to observe quite carefully. I mean, he's a physician after all. He's a bacteriologist. He's a scientist. And so he kneels anyway and he listens, not with his ears, but with his nervous system. He's not looking for chemicals and he's not listening for coherence. This man is Dr. Edward Bach, and this moment, it marks the beginning of a quiet revolution in how healing is understood. Not necessarily as domination of disease, but as restoration of harmony. Long before flowers were reduced to decoration or reduced to sentiment, they were recognized as living expressions of intelligence. In ancient cultures, flowers weren't these passive ornaments. They were the thresholds between earth and light. Aristotle wrote that living beings possess an inner principle of organization, a telos, a purpose that's moving them toward form. Flowers, as the reproductive and expressive apex of plants, they were understood to carry this intelligence in concentrated form. In Egyptian cosmology, the lotus rises from the primordial waters as the first act of creation. In Hindu traditions, the lotus is the seat of awakened consciousness. Medieval Christian mystics, they associated specific flowers with virtues, not symbolically, but energetically. Humility, courage, devotion, and even clarity. Paracelsus, the physician alchemist, he believed that nature marked its medicines through form and resonance, writing that the outward shape reveals the inward virtue. While later science dismissed this as merely superstition, modern research into plant signaling, biofields, and coherence suggests that something subtle but very real was being perceived. Flowers themselves don't heal through force, they heal through alignment. Edward Bach wasn't a mystic by training. He was deeply embedded in the early 20th century medical science. He worked with immunology, pathology, and public health. During World War I, he witnessed how emotional states shaped recovery far more reliably than treatment protocols. What disturbed him was not that medicine failed, but that it treated disease as separate from the person experiencing it. He observed that people with the same diagnosis healed differently, depending on temperament, emotional patterns, and inner conflict. Slowly, a conviction was beginning to form. Illness wasn't random. It arose when the personality fell out of alignment with the soul's intention. And so he wrote specifically, disease is in essence the result of conflict between soul and mind. Unable to reconcile this insight with institutional medicine, he left it entirely. He didn't abandon science, but he did abandon reductionism. So Bach turned toward nature, not out of fantasy, but out of necessity. He began observing how certain flowers consistently influenced emotional states, not through their chemistry alone, but through resonance. So he discovered 38 flower remedies, each corresponding to a specific emotional pattern. Fear, despair, resentment, indecision, grief, exhaustion, they weren't diagnoses. They were archetypal emotional conditions. Importantly, Bach didn't extract chemicals from the flowers. He allowed flowers to imprint their energetic pattern into water through sunlight or through gentle boiling. What mattered wasn't the substance, but what mattered the most was the information. He tested everything on himself first. He observed very carefully. He documented relentlessly. His remedies didn't suppress the symptoms, but they did restore balance. So let's talk about why flower healing works. Flowers exist at the intersection of earth and light. Their colors are frequencies. Their scents, they can be considered messengers. Their forms are responses to specific environmental conditions. Modern science confirms that plants respond to human presence. They respond to sound and intention. Contemporary studies, they show that the human heart emits a measurable electromagnetic field that interacts with surrounding life. Flower remedies, they work upstream of symptoms at the level where emotional meaning, nervous system regulation, and even perception converge. Bach remedies are typically taken orally, most often as drops placed under the tongue or added to water. A standard practice is to take 2 to 4 drops 4 times a day, though many people use them intuitively. You can take them in moments of emotional activation, transition, or even reflection. And because they're non-toxic and non-addictive, they can be used safely over short or extended periods of time. So again, they can be taken directly on the tongue, in a glass or a bottle of water, sip throughout the day. You can take them before meditation, while you're journaling, or during therapy, or during emotionally charged moments, as part of a daily emotional support practice. One thing to keep in mind is that the remedies don't suppress the emotions. They help bring emotional states back into balance, allowing clarity and resilience to return naturally. So again, you know, why should we take them? When should we take them? These remedies, they're especially useful when emotions feel stuck, if they feel overwhelming, repetitive, or disproportionate to the situation at hand. They're not for eliminating feelings, but for supporting emotional integration. So again, many people reach for them during grief, loss, or heartbreak, or anxiety, fear, or chronic worry, maybe during major life transitions, burnout or emotional fatigue, self-doubt, indecision, or lack of confidence, moments when you have these old emotional patterns starting to resurface. I'm going to give you just a few examples here that might be helpful. So number one, there is the rescue remedy. If you've been in your local Sprouts or one of your, I don't know, Whole Foods or some sort of nature store, you've most likely seen those yellow bottles of rescue remedy. This is the most famous blend, and it's used in the moments of acute stress. So if there's panic, shock, emotional overwhelm, or crises. And people often use it before difficult conversations, during travel anxiety, or even after receiving upsetting news. So just be mindful that the goal is not to be 100% sedated here. It doesn't sedate, but it's supposed to stabilize. There's also one called Mimulus. Now, it's used for your known fears, fears of public speaking, illness, confrontation, or specific situation. And its goal is to support this quiet courage and even steadiness when fear feels manageable but persistent. We also have Walnut, and this is a powerful remedy for transitions and boundaries. It's often used during life changes. Let's say examples could be moving, ending relationships, starting new phases, and when old influences or attachments make it hard to move forward cleanly. Just a couple more examples here. Mustard. This is used when sadness descends suddenly and deeply without a clear cause, and it helps lift your emotional heaviness that seems to come from nowhere. Holly is used for emotions like jealousy, resentment, anger, or suspicion. Now, holly doesn't suppress these feelings. It softens them so your underlying vulnerability can surface very safely. And one little funny story here, when I was first getting into these Bach flower remedies, I was skeptical at first. This was some years back, but I was living in Colorado at the time, and I was driving to go to the grocery store. And out of curiosity, I asked my spiritual team, okay, if this is real, I want you to show me a sign with one of the remedies listed, you know, which one you guys think I need the most. And so when I was driving to the store, I kept seeing this word over and over. And it was Willow Street, Willow this, Willow that. And then when I looked it up, it was for like forgiveness or self-forgiveness of a situation. So it was completely irrelevant at the time. So your guides, your team will alert you. That's one thing to consider. If you're trying to figure out how to choose remedies, you can always ask your own intuition, your own higher self. You can ask your spiritual team, hey, which one would be, you know, the best companion, you know, to my existing journey, or to help remedy the situation, or to help stabilize XYZ emotions. Okay. Now, Dr. Edward Bach, he taught that the remedy should match the emotional state. Two people, they can experience the same event and need entirely different remedies depending on how it affects them internally. So many people select 1 to 3 remedies that match their current emotional pattern. They use them consistently for several weeks. They reassess as emotions shift or begin to resolve. Now, you can work with a trained practitioner. That might be helpful for you if you're dealing with complex emotional patterns. But you can also work with your own intuition as well. So again, how do these remedies fit into a spiritual or self-healing practice? These remedies, they work beautifully alongside meditation and prayer, energy healing, therapy or coaching, journaling or shadow work, any type of ritual or seasonal transitions. And again, they support emotional honesty without forcing catharsis. And in spiritual practice, they can help soften your defenses so that these deeper insights can come, maybe even more compassionate towards the self can emerge. Now, these remedies, they're not a replacement for medical or mental health care. And even Dr. Bach himself was really clear about this. This is supposed to be a complementary system that's meant to support your emotional balance and self-awareness, not to diagnose or treat disease. Now, if they're used with respect and self-attunement, they can become these quiet allies. They can help you return to emotional equilibrium and maybe have a deeper sense of self-alignment. So at this point, I want to make an important distinction between flower water essences and Edward Bach remedies, essentially. Although flower water essences, they are often spoke alongside Bach flower remedies, they arise from related but very distinct traditions. Bach remedies form a closed system. They are 38 remedies that are mapped to specific emotional states identified by Bach. They're diagnostic in nature, and they're designed to correct imbalance. Flower water essences, however, are not a fixed system. They come from this very much older and fluid lineage of working with plants, working with water and land and consciousness. Rather than correcting emotional categories, they support states of becoming, whether those are transitions, initiations, grief, spiritual opening, nervous system repair, so on and so forth. So where Bach remedies teach emotional literacy, flower water essences cultivate relational sensitivity. So neither one of them is superior. They just serve different functions within the ecology of healing. So how are flower water essences traditionally made? Flower water essences are created with very minimal intervention. Fresh blossoms, you have to gather them respectfully, most of the time in the morning, and they're placed gently in pure water. The water is left in sunlight or open air for several hours. There's no crushing, there's no extraction, there's no force. And the flower is removed once its energetic pattern has been received, and then the water is preserved. This method, it echoes these very ancient alchemical and sacred water traditions where water was understood as a receptive medium capable of carrying subtle information. So in this particular lineage, water is looked at as being alive. So because flower water essences work subtly, the ethics themselves matter. Plants themselves shouldn't be over-harvested. Consent and even reciprocity are emphasized in this practice, and this relationship has to be honored. So for users, essences are taken in small doses and they're meant to accompany, not replace, medical or psychological care. They're particularly useful, I think, during emotional transitions, some form of spiritual initiation through grief, if you're overwhelmed, etc. They're considered to be more so companions, not necessarily a cure. So flower water essences, they integrate naturally into your spiritual life. They can be taken before you meditate. You can add them to your ritual baths. You can use them for anointing, or you can even incorporate them into your journaling sessions or during prayer. Many people choose essences intuitively, and they're drawn to specific flowers without having to overanalyze. This intuitive selection, it often reflects an unconscious recognition of what quality is needed. And across cultures, certain flowers appear repeatedly. Rose for grief and heart integration, lavender for calm and nervous system soothing, hawthorn for protection and heart resilience, chamomile for trust and emotional digestion, lotus for clarity amidst some form of complexity. And again, these are not necessarily prescriptions. They're supposed to be some form of relationship. So why does this matter today? Why is this important? How is this helpful? I personally think that we live in a culture of urgency, of force, and even overstimulation. And for many people, healing has become more transactional. People are being treated more so as these systems that need to be optimized. But if we look to flowers, they do offer us a bit of a different model. And I think if we look towards nature, they remind us that not all intelligence has to speak super loudly, right? The healing can arrive without some need of like violence, I guess you could say. And that coherence, it restores itself when conditions allow. Now, Edward Bach warned against healing that overrides the soul's learning. His remedies and the flower essences more broadly, they support growth without having to bypass the soul's learning. When we look at, let's say, the flower kingdom, a flower doesn't have to strive, it doesn't have to convince, it doesn't have to dominate, yet it alters everything around it. It alters the soil, the air, the pollinators, the mood. And perhaps healing has always worked this way, maybe quietly, relationally, from the inside out. And perhaps nature has been offering us medicine all along, just waiting for us to remember how to listen. Everyone, I hope that this has been helpful for you in some way. And everyone, please, as always, take care of yourselves. And I look forward to connecting to you all next week.